have heard so many relationships and so many models today, and it really reminds me of the good old days when prediction modeling was a very hot subject, and I'm glad that we're still talking about a lot of that today. First, I would like to thank Cotton Incorporated, without whom that I cannot be here, and I cannot be even afford being here. And their support is something that I appreciate forever, that's for sure. Well, let's just talk quickly about, since we have all the time until midnight, about the history. Historically, the value of cotton fiber in the marketplace has been determined by basic fiber properties, as we all know. Length, micronair, and a number of attributes that are basically or largely related to trash and the contamination and preparation. In the early 80s and during the 80s, a revolution happened, the high-volume instrument. Of course, that was a major development. It made things more consistent, more rapid, more acceptable. And later after that, the Advanced Fiber Information System, or the AFIS, which added new critical dimensions to understanding fiber quality. Today, we have to ask ourselves a number of questions. Do we know today about fiber quality better than we did 20 years ago? It should be a little bit more than 20 years, really. It should be 1980s. That's where the whole revolution started. And I see Charles Schoening here, and I'm so delighted that he's here with us. And of course, the answer to that is certainly. We know a lot today than we knew 20 years ago. And it's not always the case that when we know more, that we are in better situations. Sometimes we know so much that's so scary what to do with what we know. Do we know enough to maintain a steady and consistent quality of yarns and fabrics? And the answer to that is certainly. Experience counts, know-how counts, but when we know this information about fibers, it definitely helps. Can we truly say that today's knowledge has resulted in different approaches of manufacturing, maintenance, and management? I would say to some extent, yes. We still have a long way to go, and especially in a global market today where the cotton has to be sold in view of the true identity of the cotton, as I will discuss very shortly. And the other issue that all instrument makers are dealing with is that, can we establish an objective measure, preferably in dollars, of the value of fiber quality information that has been generated by the advanced instruments? Okay? Most of us, or people that buy instruments, are in the business of producing yarns and fabrics, and not necessarily in the business of producing data. What is the true value of fiber quality data? What's all what we're talking about here? Really, if you look at it, it's how it serves the end product. You can collect as much data as you can have. You can generate as much data as you want. You can have a huge data bank. But the bottom line is, if there is no useful use to this data, and if this data cannot be converted to some useful and usable information, then the value of the data becomes a minus value, because you encountered a cost of accessing the data and the manpower and all the issues that have to do with any instrument that we run. So the only way to make it positive, of course, is to convert this data into meaningful and usable information, and all of these are common sense. The issue is to implement these common sense. How to maximize the plus side or the value of fiber information? This is a real issue that we've been dealing with for so many years. It's an issue that concerns both the cotton growers as well as the cotton spinners, which they really have a lot in common, except in the marketplace. One of them will be interested in premium, and the others interested in discount. But the end results and the end goal is both of them are interested in producing a good product. Fiber to yarn modeling, which is the issue of this, is really one of the critical ways to maximize the benefits of fiber quality data. If we go back to history and the recent history here, in the early 80s to mid 80s, that was the hottest subject. I remember whole conferences all about yarn prediction and yarn modeling. And the main approaches then were the multiple regression approach. And of course, the neural network was a new tool that many of us have used. And the end results toward the end of the 80s was there was no possible way to develop a universal empirical model that can be applied to all cases. Our main concern at that time was the crop data, which we used to collect every year. And a model that worked for 1 year did not work for the other year. Soon after, we discovered that not only that these models cannot work for all crops, but also cannot work for different mills. So if you're going to develop a model in one textile mill, that model for sure cannot be generalized and cannot be used in another mill. And that's the nature of regression analysis. That's the nature of the classic statistical techniques that we are using. So the subject was put to rest, and even the few trials we did in the mills were time-consuming and disturbing and often costly. In the 90s, nothing happened, really. The whole interest, especially the sponsorship interest, died, and I can understand that. And when the sponsorship dies, then everything else dies. You know, we all put to rest. I personally went on and did some implementation of modeling for different textile mills here and overseas, and we did a lot of useful work. Here are some of the examples of the models that I've developed for different textile mills, and as you can see, they are all cost-related. Prediction of the waste coming from a certain variety or a certain mix of cotton, nips, the prediction of the wire age of cards due to the use of some mixes, and prediction of ends down and loom stops. And all of this was strictly related to the cotton mixes that are being used, because as you know, this is perhaps the main variable that any company, whether it is spinning or weaving, face on daily basis. Then in the 2000s, a significant renewed interest in fiber-to-yarn modeling. Basically, the Chinese were very interested in having models, either for purchasing reasons, because they want to really look at a collective index of the fiber quality. So before they buy a certain variety or a certain type of cotton, they have the right and they want to know how this variety or this type of cotton will impact the yarn quality. It's just the nature of business. Or for mixing strategy, or for performance prediction. These are all renewing reasons that we are all familiar with. And another reason, which was really interesting over the last 2 or 3 years, is the cotton identity theft. You know, if you look at all the standard HVI and the AFIS values, and you are dealing with the data mining, as we were talking early on, of cotton data from Pakistan, from China, from the US, from Egypt, and suppose that they are all within the range, medium to short stable, for example, you'd be amazed to see how similar these data are. It sounds like all cotton are alike. And on paper, they do look alike. But we all know better than that. We all know that different cottons are different, right? And the issue here is identity resolution or identity theft, because we have to be concerned, just like the people in the ELS business and Pima cotton are very concerned that the amount of claimed the Pima in products now are almost twice as much as what's actually produced. Then if we care so much about upland cotton, if we care so much about breeding and growing our cotton, then we really have to find our identity. We have to go out and say, well, the cotton may look alike, okay, on papers, the HVI values may look alike, but this is what our cotton can do against any other type of cotton. That is the identity of a cotton, which counts at the very end. So the issue of modeling comes back, not only for developing relationships, as we heard today, but also for bigger reasons. But the good old days reminded us that we failed miserably in developing a universal model that can work everywhere. So as a result of that, we have to think of different approaches. And the question really came from whether we are trying to predict an actual values by a particular mill, or we are trying to estimate anticipated values of yarn properties made from certain fiber properties. And these are two different goals, although they look alike. You know, are we really trying to predict or explore the acceptable values of yarn properties, or we are trying to predict actual values as they happen in a particular mill? And the difference between these two result in different in the approaches. One is a strictly classic prediction and regression analysis, and the other one is estimation. Estimation was a great deal of judgmental effort. I've seen today some models that are unbelievable. You know, it's so easy to have an 0.99 correlation between the consumption of ice cream in Myrtle Beach in the summertime and the rate of crime in Chicago at the same time. It will be an 0.99. And I can give you the cause as well, although statistics does not deal with cause and effects, but there is a good cause for that correlation to be that high. So we need to be very careful. It's almost like we have to go back to basics and see how prediction models are developed. It's just no way in our business to have a model that's 0.95 and 0.96 and 0.98. If you have models like that, then you either have used few points and all what it takes to make a straight line is 2 points, as you all know, okay? Or you have not used enough data, or you have done a lot of smoothing to come up with that 0.95 and 0.98. It's easy to happen, but it's not real. So the estimation approach, which is different, which I discussed how it was done briefly last year, and I'm going over it again, it really depends on the all in the database. I've seen a model that Eric showed today that has the yarn strength in one side, which is the dependent variable, and the fiber length on the other side, and the correlation was 0.99 or 0.95, and that can happen. But we all know what could lead to that high correlation. As Dr. Meletko was talking about, the collinearity and the interrelationship between the independent variables is extremely tricky. You can go back to a paper that I published in 1987, and it tells you step by step about the rules and the regulations that you have to follow before you jump into an 0.97, 0.95 correlation. When you have an 0.95 correlation, you must question the reliability of what you're doing. As simple as that. Okay? So either that or to follow the new approach that we did, which is an estimation approach rather than a prediction approach. A database with extreme and the medium values, extreme values of fibers and yards, and then full factorial combinations. And that's one thing that I'm adding this year. I'm just giving you the information in pieces because I really believe that this new approach is patentable and is really, really stunning approach in terms of results. We use the basic fiber properties as well as fiber properties produced by the APHIS, and also the standard yarn properties. This is just an idea about the different spinning systems that we use, different yarn types and different yarn counts. And last year I showed you some of the model verification graphs. Here are some more. And the idea here, keep in mind, we're developing the model using an independent set of data, and then we're taking this model and trying to verify it using data in any spinning mill. In other words, just send me your data and keep your yarn properties, and I will send you back the prediction. And it's amazingly stunning results how the predicted value or the estimated value is in agreement with the actual values. We're talking about a predictive power of 96.8. That's stunning. That can never happen in a normal regression analysis. But it can happen when you estimate rather than when you predict. These are different yarn properties and different predictive power. And all what you have to do is just put our models to test. Send me your data, keep your yarn properties values, and I will send the results, and I would love to see our models put to more tests. We then start looking at some applications, and because of the time, and we're getting close to midnight, so I'm going to go close to the finishing here. Some of the applications of modeling, in addition to all the relationships that we heard today, is finding some patterns of fiber properties by variety, by cotton types, within the yarn envelopes, yarn properties envelopes. So you can look at where your cotton fits by regions or by variety. Here are some details, which of course, the paper will be inclusive enough for you to understand all of these. Here are some more graphs that you will understand briefly, which is the US crop data. These are the fiber properties. These are the yarn properties corresponding to it. In other words, identifying a certain region, not just by the fiber property, but also the yarn property coming from that region, looking at the fiber in collective fashion, because as we all know, a deficiency in one fiber property can be compensated for by an improvement in another, and unless we look at all fiber properties in collective fashion, then we defeat the purpose. Here are some of the trends that we have seen over the last 7-8 years in the crop, increases and decreases in fiber quality, and here are the corresponding predicted values. So now as we speak about our cotton over the last 6 or 7 years, we can start talking in addition to talking about how the micronaire change and how the length change and how the strength change, we can start talking about how a yarn strength of a certain count, okay, made from open end or ring or compact, has changed over the last 7-8 years. In other words, the impact of the each cotton crop on the quality of the end product. And I think that should be the ultimate results, as any product is can only be reflected in what it does in the end product. With that, I'm going to close. We feel extremely good about the performance of the universal models. We have a predictive value of 90%, even for some of the very difficult yarn properties, which we know that about 60% of it is processing related. The good news is we're really separating the fiber effect from the yarn effect by the approach we have taken. We are currently working on the so-called fiber recipe concept, where we're going to go backward now. For a given yarn properties, for a given quality set, what combinations of fiber properties can be used? And I hope that I will have the chance to continue with that, because that's a very neat approach as well. That is for a given set of yarn properties. What are the optimal combinations of fibers? And you know, there can be so many combinations. Finally, we need all the help that we can get. Without sponsorship, we cannot continue the work. And this is not the only guy that's crying. We're all crying for help and hope that we're going to have more support and we're going to have some way to work. Because a guy like me at this age and after 25, 26 years in this business, if I don't get support, you know, I can easily retire. But I don't want to retire because I love what I'm doing so much. And I'm relying on your support. Thank you very much.